Hi, ladies and gents, welcome to the latest Trinity Tim's podcast with myself, James Forrest of the Celtic blog, and my two colleagues, Eric Knott and Joe McHugh. Eric of Read Celtic and Joe of Video Celts. How are we tonight, lads? All right?
Good. Can't complain on this nice sunny evening in Ireland anyway.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So, let's start by talking about yesterday. Scottish Cup semi-final. Everything seemed to go all right with their digital tickets. I heard a few horror stories, but only a few. The game itself was about as straightforward as we could have got. Whatever Rodgers has said to the players, whatever little differences there were, whatever issues seemed to be affecting them, they were certainly not evident yesterday. The same as against the Kilmarnock, same as in the Kilmarnock game. Once we got the goal, the goals flowed. There were a few wee moments of refereeing controversy. The obvious push on a Celtic player, which is one of the most baffling decisions I've ever seen. That had to go to VAR should embarrass every member of the Scottish FA refereeing fraternity. And the one that did go to VAR, of course, the penalty decision, which I think is equally absurd. Equally absurd. But we can talk about all that later on. The performance was excellent. I thought it was another game where Rio Hatate showed us the full range of his skills, and I wrote about that this morning and why we should we now have a serious decision to make about him. Maeda got another two, and as we'll discuss a little bit later, Big Adam Ida ended a very unusual week, we'll say, with a goal. So, I mean, it delivered exactly what it was supposed to. We're in the final. Rodgers is, whatever he's done, has sorted things out with the players. And it looks like the Celtic team that started the season again. So first, I'll ask you for your view on it, Joe, and then Eric.
Yep, it was as good a performance as you could hope for. The doubts that we all had 2 weeks ago after the St Johnstone game, which followed on from the Hearts game, which followed on from the Glasgow derby, and various other dodgy displays, I think they can be put aside now. I think making four changes to the team, sticking with those four changes, we seem to have got something back. And I don't think a month ago folk would have had James Forrest and Greg Taylor in their starting 11, but I think most folk would have that for this coming Saturday away to Dundee United. So it was a good performance right from the start. They were on top of the game, pressing St Johnstone. Any time they had the ball, there was three Celtic players hounding them. It was good patience. I think after 25 minutes, there might have been a few little concerns with the game at McDermott Park still fresh in the memory. But the team just stuck to doing what they were doing. But I don't think there'd been too many shots on target. But McGregor had one weak one, and there's a few near things, but no real saves for their goalkeeper. But once Callum McGregor took his time and popped that one away, there was virtually no stopping Celtic. And it was a great way to finish the first half. The support had been enjoying themselves. The good day, noisy, lively, etc., etc. And then to rattle in four goals before half time, get the game finished, was outstanding. So, second half comes and goes, but we'll take it. Rodgers talked about there's five more SPFL matches, and I think he mentioned something about many targets. But if we're knocking in four goals and 20 minute spells in each of those matches, we'll be very happy. So everything's looking a good deal better. I think most of us were a bit concerned about going to Ibrox in 2 weeks, about what state the squad was in, what the mentality was like. But I think those concerns can be put to one side. That is by far the most important game of the five remaining at the SPFL. Surely Rodgers and the players have had a shake, realised that they can't let it happen for a third time. So we'll wait for that one, but there's a league to be won before then. But from Sunday at Hampden, you couldn't have asked for much more. So I'll pass over to Eric for his thoughts.
Yeah, I suppose when I think back on our predictions last week, I kind of said that if Celtic got the first goal, that the floodgates would open. And as I called it then, that's pretty much how it worked out. as soon as Callum McGregor scored that first goal, the floodgates just opened, and it was kind of inevitable that that was going to happen based on the play that had been, you know, the way Celtic had been playing beforehand. As you pointed out, Joe, they were very aggressive. There was, you know, three men surrounding the St. Johnstone players in any given time that they had the ball. They were just allowed no time on the ball whatsoever. Celtic were, like, really in full flow. They were in a full Hampden flow. Like, this is the kind of performance they always say for Hampden. But they were just majestic yesterday. Once that flurry of goals in those 12 minutes in the first half came, it was game over at halftime. And it was, it was a really good performance overall. Like we said, the second half, this seems to be the pattern. We have a really good first half and it kind of tapers off a bit in the second half. But I didn't feel it had tapered off too much in the second half. I mean, we were still on the attack for most of the second half. And Jota's goal was an excellent goal, very, very well taken goal. How he took it from that angle so tight and so neatly was very, very good. But we had to have the usual controversies from the referee. That push was absolutely ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And then, I mean, how much more do you need to clatter into a player in the penalty box, elbow him in the head? I mean, was it three St. Johnstone players practically took him out and he tried to stay on his feet? And then Andrew Dallas in the VAR room, what do you expect? I knew as soon as the whistle was blown for the penalty that it would be looked at and that they would try and find a way out of it. And then obviously they topped it all off with their mercy killing at the end of it. Blowing the whistle up on 90, which is just, we pick and choose the rules as we see fit.
It's one of the most infuriating things that they did in officiating. It's one of it drives me absolutely crazy. And I thought there was a UEFA directive about this, that the referee has to add on time at the end of the game. But apparently not. No one's got them anyway. They certainly don't follow
it. There was a fair bit of, fair few substitutions. There was the stops for the VAR checks. There was at least, to my mind, 4 to 5 minutes anyway that could have been played there in injury time. I suppose it's a cup game. There's no goal difference. It's not going to make a difference at the end of the game, like it would if it was a league game. So, but I just don't see the sense in it. If there's injury time to be played, play the injury time, regardless of what the scoreline is. It doesn't make sense to me. But overall, I thought it was a really, really complete performance. And I was absolutely delighted that Adam Ida got his goal and shut his critics up for the abuse he pretty much took in the media, in the mainstream media throughout the week. It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But I know we'll touch on that later, and obviously we all have our piece to say about it. But what it does do is, if we continue to play that way for the 5 remaining SPFL games and we go to Ibrox in that kind of frame of mind, mentality, approach, I could see us really hurting them there. I don't think Brendan is going to make the same mistake a third time running. So no. I really feel that we could go there and have a statement victory. The players have to have the same kind of mentality as they had in the game yesterday, the same kind of aggression. They have to be all over the Ibrox players. I wrote a piece last week where I said that the loss against Athletic Bilbao will have taken the wind out of their sails somewhat. And being out of Europe and having nothing at all left to play for except this. This is it. It's probably Barry Ferguson's swan song. It's for him to say that he did it twice. I'm sure he'll be wanting to do it twice, but I'm sure Brendan at the same time will not be wanting it to happen for a third time. And I genuinely think if we approach it like we did yesterday, we should comfortably win there. So yeah, that's my take on yesterday's game.
You mentioned Ida, so we'll shift the order in a wee bit here and we'll talk about him first. As I said in the piece I put up today about it, there are some players that you feel a special place for when they score a goal, and the utter nonsense of a week that guy had. And then on the morning of the game, and I think we know who we're talking about here without having to name him because there's been enough of that already. His article was beyond belief, beyond belief. The manager was wrong to defend the player. These guys have to realise that they're public property. As if that's a legitimate statement. I mean, these are players who are just ordinary working guys like us. They make a bit more money, but effectively they're just working guys like us. And they're entitled to private lives and they're entitled to privacy. And this dickhead doesn't believe that. He thinks that when you play in this city, that's you in this public eye. And you know what I mean? As if you were some kind of MP who had canvassed to hold absolute power or something. I mean, these are football players. They don't belong to you and they don't belong to me. It doesn't matter that we watch them and cheer for them. They, you know what I mean? They're entitled to go out and have a good time on a night off the same as we are. I mean, Christ almighty, if people filmed me every time I was out on the piss, I would never be able to show my face in public again. I just thought it was some of the most ridiculous sentiments I've read in a long time. And that's saying something considering his usual standard of garbage. I thought it was excellent to see the manager stand up for him. And I thought that Brendan's comments were absolutely right on the nose. It's a sad day when we're talking about this, as if these are people, you know, in celebrity magazines or gossip columns. I just thought it was unconscionable. What he wrote, absolutely shocking. And I was delighted that Big Ida scored and rammed it down his throat. Eric, I know you've got strong views on this as well, mate. Why don't you tell us what they are, man? Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously I was disgusted with the article that he wrote yesterday as well. It was just an open attack on Adam Ida. And I had said on Saturday, he wrote an article about Barry Ferguson on Saturday, and I said, if Hugh Keevans predicts that Barry Ferguson is leaving the Ibrox club, then Barry Ferguson is staying, because everything that Hugh Keevans predicts is bollocks. And it always, the complete opposite of everything he predicts happens. So I said in that article, if you're a betting man, go out and lay a bet on Barry Ferguson becoming the full-time manager at Ibrox. And I followed it up yesterday morning by saying, if you're a betting man, go out and put a fiver on Adam Ida to score, because he's going to score. There's 100% guarantee he's going to score.
He scored at me and asked me if I'd done it.
Yeah. And so Ida went out and he proved Keevan's utterly wrong, which is, for me, what pissed me off most about the article is it's the scattergun approach that Keevan's has. It's the way he approaches these things. He puts no thought into it. He has, his articles have as much holes as a sieve where you can just pick it apart. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, really. And he, to say that he was probably going to go down as the biggest waste of money in Celtic's history, I mean, that's beyond extreme. That's beyond extreme to say that about a player who was pivotal in us landing the title last season, who was pivotal in us winning the Scottish Cup. Yeah. And his 9 goals were possibly the difference between us winning and losing the league last season. He scored at Ibrox, which should have been the winning goal at Ibrox. But not only that, it was getting us into the Champions League by winning the league. He contributed in a big way to that.
Yeah, he did.
And ultimately, the 50 million that we made out of the Champions League, if you include the gate receipts and what we made in prize money out of the actual participation, like, the guy cost us 9 million. But he contributed massively towards us making 50 million. So to say that this guy is actually the biggest waste of money in Celtic's history is brain dead. It's absolutely brain dead, and it makes no sense whatsoever. And I followed it up with an article today where he said like that Brendan Rodgers has a serious challenge on his hands to make Adam Ida a better player. Brendan Rodgers has made Adam Ida a better player.
Of course he
Adam
has.
Ida, yeah,
Adam Ida, tell you as well.
Yeah.
Adam Ida, the guy scored 24 goals since he signed for Celtic, right?
Yeah.
If he'd scored that same number of goals for Norwich, the fee that he would have went for would have been much bigger, much bigger. Instead of a high seven-figure sum, you'd have got an 8-figure sum.
Yeah.
I mean, if Brendan was managing the Premier League and was trying to buy Adam Ida, and in the last 16 months, Ida had scored 24 goals for Norwich, he would have considered 9 million a bargain. So it's absolute lunacy to say that he's going to go down as one of the worst wastes of money in Celtic's history. I think that's absolute moon-howling.
And to say that Brendan Rodgers is struggling to improve the player when he is just about to round off his most prolific season to date as a striker. And he still has, I mean, he's got 6 games left to play. There's nothing to say that since he broke his duck, because he's had a couple of spells throughout the season where he's, you know, he hasn't scored, and then it's gone on for a while, and then he has, and he scored a good few. So there's a good chance that he could score four or five more and finish the season at 20 goals. I mean, you consider that he's a guy who's been coming off the bench an awful lot, and he's not been starting as much as he's been coming off the bench. I mean, 20 goals is a fantastic return for anybody. And obviously, I mean, it's very hard to emulate what Daisy Maeda is doing, but Daisy Maeda, you have to also take into account, plays in two positions. He plays the left wing and he plays the central role now as well. So he has, I mean, he scored both of his goals from the position on the wing yesterday. So he's just as prolific on the wing as he is through the middle. And you pointed out, James, that to watch Ida yesterday, he pulls players all over the place. He's very effective in what he does when he doesn't have the ball. And he's very effective in the way that he lays the ball off as well to other players. So, and Brendan Rodgers himself said, I don't look, it's not all about goals for me. It's also about what he contributes to the overall game. And even Callum McGregor spoke very highly of him yesterday and said, look, I mean, if the guy is out on a night out when he's off the next day, all that matters to us is what he does on the training pitch and how he shows up, how he shows up for his work every day. And he's not found wanting there. So what's the issue? You know, so yeah, I mean, the whole thing was barmy. It was just, but I mean, there's just been, as we'll flesh out later on, there's just been utter ranting and insane ranting going on in the media over the last weekend. I think it must really be getting to them that Celtic are about to land another treble. So I'll pass it over to Joe anyway.
I'm just amazed at a media that,
apologies, I seem to be having a few Wi-Fi issues.
What's up? You having issues again this week? Looks like it, doesn't it? Are you there?
You look okay there now, Joe.
Yeah. Right. First of all, I'll talk while I can while the Wi-Fi's on. Relax, chill. Don't worry about what a silly old man is saying in a dying newspaper. Look, there's...
Oh, you go, sir.
I don't know how, any suggestions how I can switch to my mobile hotspot?
Keep going,
I'll keep going. No, don't get upset about Hugh Keevans and the Sunday Mail Daily Record. One week he speculates about how wonderful life's going to be if the club from Ibrox win their next match and then go to the end of the season unbeaten. And then the next week he tells you, The end is nigh for Celtic. Celtic lose their next match and the world falls apart. Adam Ida's the worst player since Arne Engels, etc., etc., etc.
The worst player since,
like we all seen Raphael Scheidt and Ayo Bekovic, and more recently we've seen Barkas and Ayeti.
Yeah, that's right, aye. It's a lot of money wasted there.
As well as scoring three goals in the Champions League, as well as those three Champions League goals in between the Wi-Fi breaks, he also created their own goal for Young Boys Bern. So
he's been
very heavily involved in the Champions League, and none of Keevan's pin-up boys at Ibrox. Nico Raskin not been involved. Alfredo, I think he was involved in one Champions League campaign. Tav's taken a few penalties. Scotty Arfield, a colleague at the Daily Record, he put that club 1-0 up against Liverpool in an 8-goal thriller. So relax, Hugh.
I remember it well. I have fonder memories of it than I suspect most Ibrox fans.
To give a slap to, and you don't need to worry about him. It provides an easy copy. Don't get upset by him. It's pretty sad that someone of his vintage has still got to be on the wind-up and earning money. He really should have plenty by now. He should stick to the bowling clubs and whatever else, playing dominoes or whatever, and try to fix his mobile phone. But for some sad reason, he feels he's got to irk up the Celtic support. He's a full-time troll. And relax. don't worry about him. Adam Ida will keep on scoring goals. He'll keep on writing nonsense, but he's writing for his market. Sunday Mail readers, it's disappearing fast, but there's still some of them out there. There's still a lot of people, still close to 40,000 people that are putting £2.20 into the newsagents every Sunday to buy that nonsense. And that's what they're there for. So chill out, relax, enjoy it, and it's very, very irrelevant.
Well said, sir. Now, if we could touch on one other thing for the game, Dyson, of course, scored two again. I'll keep this as brief as possible. How many goals is it going to finish on this season? And are we now talking legitimately about the best striker since Larsson, Joe?
Not the best since Larsson. Gary Hooper and Gary Hooper, Moussa Dembele, they come to mind. If you do over two, if he does it again next season, I'll say yes. If you can knock even Lee Griffiths scored some incredible numbers of goals.
Yep, so, great record.
There's a few contenders in there. We're delighted we've got him just now. I certainly hope we have him next season. I think he'll fall just short of 40. He's on 33, I think, now. I think it's 33. I think there's maybe another four or five in him. But unfortunately, Alan Muir denied him a goal against Hibs. Unfortunately, Greg Aitken and his squiggly lines denied him a goal against Kilmarnock. If he had those two, I would think he could hit 40. But I think he'll fall just short of that goals target. But I reckon he'll have three medals as compensation.
I'm sure that will help him sleep better. Eric, what about you?
Well, I called it a while back that he'd hit the 40 mark, so I think he will. He'll round it on 40. I think there's you know, I mean, guy, if he's on form and if Celtic are on form and if Celtic play the way they played yesterday, there was a couple of goals and dies in my head every game like that. So I definitely think that he could. If we really turn the afterburners on in the next few games, yeah. I could see him being put into a lot of good positions and getting a lot of opportunities to score goals. So I think he could hit the 40. So I'll go for 4-0 on the button.
Ironically, what might prevent him getting there is if the manager continues to show faith in Big Adam and plays him through the middle.
True.
If Mikey was playing through the middle for the next six games, I've got no doubt whatsoever he would get it. No doubt whatsoever. But it's just what the manager wants to do with Big Ida at the moment. That
might, but as I said, it didn't stop him, didn't slow him down yesterday. He still got
I must admit. Now, right, so some of the guys were asking last week why we didn't talk about the fakeover. And this has been a bit of an odd weekend for the fakeover stories. Let's cover Jackson first. Jackson sounds more and more like a guy who realizes he's been used. I always say this is what the useful idiot doesn't realize. It's that when somebody's thinking about how they're going to use the useful idiot, that the appropriate word is the idiot, not the useful. And Jackson is starting to sound more and more like a guy who realizes that he's been made a mug of again by flashy PR or whatever it is. The backtracking, as Joe said in a piece last week, has already started now, and it started for real. And then just as you think you're getting to a point where some of the media are starting to twig that this isn't all is made out to be, you have a story like Andy Devlin's last night that says that it's closer than ever. A story then repeated by Chris Jack, who's heard from the same sources that it's closer than ever. How close is that? Oh, don't look for it by the end of April. Look for it by the end of May. So it doesn't seem to be closer than ever. But Devlin's story, which Jack has repeated, is that they now have the 51%. But when you actually read the comment on which that's based, the comment says that they don't have the 51%, but they know how they're going to get to the 51%. They're going to do it with what they are calling a finance issue, right? So I Googled that the day and then asked a few people a question or two about this. And they confirmed what I suspected it was when I read it. What they really mean is that they're going to issue enough shares, additional shares, new shares, to get these people to 51%, right? But that has so many holes in it and so many flaws in it and so many obstacles to overcome that I didn't want to just like do a brief like 5-minute chat about it on here. So the piece that I've actually put up at 6 o'clock and it goes through it in some more detail. But the upshot is that it's basically a surrender. They don't know how they're going to get to 51% by buying the shares. So they're going to create more shares. And by doing that, they're going to try and get to the 51%. The problem with that, as I say in the piece, is that in order to get a new share issue, they need permission from existing shareholders, because you can't just dilute the current share values of everyone else just to arrive at your magic number. So they need permission to do it from the shareholders who presumably are holding out. And if they can get that kind of authority, then they don't need to do it in the first place because they're already over the line. None of it makes any sense. But again, if you've looked at that report yesterday and you're asking even the most basic questions about it, you've already done more than Andy Devlin has evidently done. You've done more than Chris Jack has evidently done. But Keith Jackson is starting to sound like a guy who knows that he's been made an absolute mug out of. And he's starting to backtrack a wee bit. And his piece this morning was about as crazy as anything I've ever read from him. But the doubts in there are obvious. He wonders if these people even have a coherent plan. He's talking about hiring a manager based on data and AI, so he's not convinced. He's no longer convinced anyway. We'll say, Joe, you're the man on this. You're the fake over, not a takeover. Right from the start, what do you think of Devlin's article last night?
James, you're overthinking it. Nothing's happening. Nothing at all is happening. But there's a guy in South Africa that's been trying for 5 years to shift his worthless shares. He's found a guy in America, and he's got a guy in Scotland that will write about it 3 and 4 times a week and go on a podcast and talk about it. Nothing is happening. All this 51% and rights issues, there's nothing happening to it. It's a nice...
I was just enjoying that there, Joe.
And back again. It's a nice... It's the ultimate deflection story. It's the ultimate squirrel story. Celtic draw 1-1 with Bayern Munich. The next day, world explosive. San Francisco 49ers, multi-million takeover. Can't remember the phrase he used. But the amount of spending that's going to go on in the summer. Roll forward a couple of weeks. Lose at home to Motherwell, and 2 days later, Sky Sports have got the deal's been agreed in principle to obtain 51% of the shares. All that's required now is due diligence. And as we all know,
he'll be back.
I'm sure he will be.
Due diligence doesn't mean anything. It's an absolute formality. It's a rubber stamping job. And then 2 hours after Celtic hammer St Johnston, realising their worst nightmare, Celtic are going to finish the season in a Scottish Cup final at Hampden. Celtic are looking damn good for another treble. Here we go. And the Sun and the Rangers review both got the same story at the same time with the same quotes. But the thing I really like is, despite 2010, 11, 12 and Craig White and all the rest of it, there is still absolutely no one on their social media that is twigged that they're getting used. I think the minute you suggest that, wait a minute, lads, you're immediately accused of being a Celtic supporter, a panty wetter, whatever the hell it is, there is absolutely, there's plenty of bored cheerleaders among Celtic fan media. None of us three are, but over there, I think they slaughter Keith Jackson all the time, but because Keith Jackson delivered them some good news on the 19th of February, the World Exclusive, Keith's all right now. They can believe anything he says. And it's hilarious, but there is nothing happening. No one is buying shares. There's no consortium. And it went from the 49 Jers through to Leeds United, through to Andrew Kavanagh. And I think over the weekend, the Record described Kavanagh as a billionaire, but... there's nothing whatsoever to back that up. So nothing's happening. They're just launching different stories at different times to deflect away. The season ticket money is starting to roll in. And at some point, there's going to be some small problem unearthed. I remember with Craig White, they discovered the wee tax case, which threw a spanner on the works and put the asking price down to £1. So there'll be some small problem unearthed that no one could have understood, no one could have predicted. It'll all fall apart, and Dave King will need to go back to try to find some other mug to sell his shares to. It's not happening. Over to you, Eric.
Well, I can't really argue with anything that Joe was saying there. In fact, I haven't been arguing with anything Joe has been saying throughout this whole process. So don't forget Gretar Steinsson as well, guys. You know, there was a big write-up on Gretar Steinsson and what he's going to do when he comes to Irox and what he did at Fleetwood Town and how he bossed people around at Fleetwood Town and so on and so forth. So they're trying to pull all these guys out of the woodwork that are going to do great jobs at the Ibrox side when they get there, you know, but there's nobody there yet. And I put up an article last week and I kind of said, what's the end game? If this is actually, hypothetically speaking, if this is actually happening, what is the end game? Because it's to get to the fabled 51%, you're talking 50 million or more spent to buy out all those, to buy out all those shares. To get to the 75%, which is to exert control over the club, you're talking probably another 20, 30 million. So these guys, before they've ever put a cent into the football operation, will have had to invest anywhere between 75 to 80, maybe even 100 million, because that's the figure being bandied about by the media. But look, anything is everything and anything goes in the media at the moment. The simple fact is, if you're going to plunge that amount of money into the club, and then you're going to have to start investing in the playing squad, you're going to have to invest in a new manager if you're not holding on to Barry Ferguson. The costs are astronomical. They're off the scale. To what end? What's the end game? Where are these guys who are supposedly like smart businessmen, where are they intending making money here? Because we know the ceiling that the Ibrox club is at in terms of what it can make, in terms of what it can earn. So what master plan do these guys have up their sleeves if they do manage to pull this off? And the question you've got to ask is, like, are they angling towards the European League? And again, this is all just, it's hypothetical. It's all just speculation. They can't, like, we discussed a couple of weeks ago that Leeds lost 76 million. Leeds are still, okay, they're still on track maybe to get into the Premier League automatically, but, like, do these guys have a penchant for losing money? I don't know. Because we know that the Ibrox side is probably going to post losses in excess of 20 million this year. So I just can't see where these guys think they're going to make money out of this. Unless they have this grand master plan up their sleeves that they're, you know, that they're going to be in a European league that nobody knows anything or nobody knows anything about. But I can't see it. I just can't see the sense in it. I can't see what the end game is, what they expect to achieve. Because, I mean, they're like, if they want to challenge us, that outside of the money it's going to cost to acquire the club or a controlling interest in the club, is going to be off the scale if they want to try and compete with us. And the thing is, as I said, we'll just turn the afterburners on. If they decide to come after us, or if they decide to spend big, then we'll match or exceed. And we'll just keep, we'll do exactly, nothing will change in terms of the way that we operate. We'll spend as much as it takes to stay just ahead.
Yeah.
But if that entails us spending 50 million quid, then we can do that. And we can do, we have that money to do that. But again, that's all just pure speculation. I don't get it. I don't get what the end game is. I don't understand what they're looking to achieve here. I honestly can't see them making, like, these are the Ibrox directors have plowed millions into the club out of their own pocket for the love of the club.
For the love of the club. That's right.
Yeah. And they have, I would say, at this moment in time, they never expected, up until this whole San Francisco 49ers takeover came about, they never expected to get that money back. I'd say a lot of them had written it off. I'd say John Bennett had written it off. I'd say he'd written off the 20 million he put into the club and said there's no chance of me getting that back. So I just, if the directors are bought out, again, I also said that the Yanks are probably lowballing the directors. They're not going to pay them full whack, the full price share that they're looking for. They're probably going in and saying, look, this is what we offer you, take it or leave it.
And oh, she has a toilet paper?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, again, you have that issue. The shares aren't worth toilet paper. So, like, do you think that the consortium are going to come in and say to John Bennett or to Dave King, yeah, look, here's 20 million for you. Here's 25 million for you. It's not going to work that way. They're going to try and iron out a deal here, and they're definitely not going to pay full whack. And this is what's holding the whole thing up. I said, never the twain shall meet. They can't. The Ibrox directors are not happy with what they're being offered, and the Yanks are not happy to pay what they want. And so they're at an impasse. That's the way I see it. And even at that, I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. I can't see that if a consortium takes it over, what they expect to make out of it. I just can't.
It's the simplicity of some of the arguments being offered. Now, I can see some of them in the comments right now. These people must have a plan. Really? Must they? You sure about that? Have you looked at the number of clubs in England that have been bought by local businessmen, whatever it might be, who've sunk tens of millions into clubs, seen it all disappear with no end product at all, right? And had to walk away and try and find a buyer for their shares, having written off millions in debts, right? I read a comment somewhere a few years ago from a former English Premier League chairman who said that if this was any other business, every single club would have gone out of business, because football is like its own wee weird universe where the way money gets spent doesn't make any sense. So I am not convinced that they have to have a plan. I'm not convinced. But I don't see an upside. I don't see any upside. I've pulled this up. Believe me, I've pulled this apart from every angle. Joe is right. I might be overthinking it, but I've done the thinking about it. I've pulled it apart from every conceivable angle, and there is no viable route to a profit here. None that I can see. And I've looked at it every way I can. If these people have found a way to make money out of that club, right, it's a way nobody at Celtic has thought of to make money out of ours, right, to make more money out of ours. Because even with our profits, right, even with the amount of money that we make and the success that we have, if we were paying shareholder dividends, they'd be minuscule. They may add up to 50 million, 100 million pounds over a 10-year, 20-year period. Right? We don't make enough profits to justify that. So how the hell are they going to do it? I mean, this isn't so much magic money trees as buying beanstalk beans and hoping that will grow. It's insane. It makes no sense. There is literally no universe in which I can see these people making money out of this. None. There's no prospect of it. And if these people are as smart as they're being made out, what are they doing in this in the first place? They should just take one look under the bonnet and go, this is a piece of shit, and do it on her. It makes no sense. I mean, honestly, and people saying, Fergus came in and took our Celtic, and look what Fergus did. Fergus took out a club that had a ramshackle stadium, no business plan whatsoever, and saw the massive potential and marketing Celtic as this brand, build a stadium, create the season ticket base, and it all pays for itself. And at the end of it, end of his five-year plan, and that was it. He came in with a plan. He had it costed. He had it completely thought through. He had a time frame on it, the whole lot. And at the end of it, he left and did exactly what he said he was going to do. The shares that he bought that at the time were worth, what, 7 or 8 million pounds, sold them back to the fans and walked away with, what, 30 or 40. But that was because he built an entire company. He built Celtic from being a ramshackle falling down football club into a business, into a brand. There is no room to do that at Ibrox. They're operating at peak financial capacity. As much money as they're making in right now, that's about as much as they will make. That's about as much as they can make with a Scottish glass ceiling we've got here. It is mad. It makes no sense. The cost of doing this alone, 50, 100 million pounds. That's money pissed against the wall. Buying anything.
They might as well catch it and burn it. Burn
it. It's mad, of course. It makes no sense. None of it.
Yep.
No one has explained the logic of it to me, except for some mad fantasy of a European Super League. There are cheaper options than spending 100 million pounds on this out there. If that's the end game. As David Lowe said it himself on one of the Celtic fan podcasts, you could pick up a club in Portugal for much less than that. In Portugal, you get access to the whole South and Central American transfer market if your model is going to be built on buying and selling players. That makes much more sense than trying to operate in the Brexit UK. It's mad. None of it makes any sense. It's crazy. But it's sold a lot of newspapers.
It has. And then there's the, you know, they're jizzing in their pants now. Jose Mourinho coming.
Week unless UEFA's running it. This is the fact. I've been hearing this European Super League nonsense for ages as well. And it is nonsense. No one supports this. You'll never get the German clubs on board because of the 50+1 rule. The French clubs have run a mile from it. There's a regulatory body in England now which will prevent any English club from ever joining it. So there's three of the top five leagues out completely. Won't look at it. Celtic will never go near it because we're tied into UEFA. The Ibrox club will never go near it because they see themselves as one of the founders of the European Club Association and all this bollocks, right? Most countries don't want any idea. There will never be a European Super League unless it's got UEFA's name on it. And what we've got right now in the Champions League is about as close as we'll get. It's all nuts. It's all fucking absolutely nuts. I just don't get any of it. None of it makes any sense. And believe me, I have tried to make sense of it, and it doesn't. Joe's right. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm as crazy as some of these people are. But I just don't see it. And I've pulled it apart from every angle, and I just don't see it. Don't see what the plan is.
Yep.
I can get on with the rest of this podcast now.
James, there is no plan. No plan at all. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Dave King wants to sell shares, try and build up a bit of momentum. Everybody gets bought into it. Whip it up. Every time there's a bad result or a setback, bring out some update that isn't an update. Keep them all happy. Cross your fingers that somebody wins the Euro lottery at the end of the season to keep things going. Relax. Don't burst any more blood vessels. Try to examine it. Just sit back and laugh at it. Enjoy it.
Do you remember when Cobb 1872 was heralding that it got 7.5% and all that, and they were heading for 10%, and they were going to be not a majority interest in the club, but they would have enough influence to prevent votes and nominate a director and all that stuff. You have to wonder where they are in this, man. They're 7.5% when doing to something like 5% because of all the equity confetti that was necessary just to keep King and these guys happy. And then they got diluted even further than that. And I don't even know what percentage they hold right now. But they've been made an utter irrelevance. And I cannot believe that the largest shareholder organisation, among a support that's already seen a club die and go out of business because of debts and because of shady ownership and badly thought through plans, is actually wearing this. They haven't made a single statement on this. They've not asked a single question. The questions that we've asked, and we ask every week on this damn thing and every day on the blogs, not a single one of them is asking those questions. Not a single mainstream journalist is asking any of those questions. Graeme Spears, who is probably one of the better guys analysing some of this stuff, I listened to his podcast on the night this story broke, and he said, oh, there's obviously a lot of questions, but let's not ask any of them because let's just enjoy ourselves speculating on what might happen. I'm like, what? Seriously? You're not going to ask a single question. Let's just have fun speculating on how much money they're spending, whether they can get Rafa Benitez to come in as manager. What? And that's been the attitude of all of them. And I can understand that from the media to an extent. I cannot understand fans who've seen a club die already, simply rolling over for this. This is their club. They don't know whose hands they might be putting it in. And they don't know what the plan is. It blows my mind. I tell myself over and over again, this would not be us. We would not let this happen without knowing more details in this. And then I wonder, would we? I know the three of us wouldn't let it happen, but I wonder about some other people. And I don't know. That's a thought to keep you up at night, so I don't want to dwell on that too much.
Don't go up at night.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, am I crazy or what, Eric? I mean, would we have questions? We would have questions.
Absolutely.
Would the Celtic support as a whole just allow this? I know the media would be pulling it apart, trying to find holes in it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, we wouldn't... Look, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot here and something like this was happening with us, the media would be poking every possible hole that they could in it. So, and they would be questioning it from every angle, in every way, shape and form that they could. So we all know that if we were involved... our fan base would want to know everything. We'd be having meetings. The fans would be rocking up to Celtic Park. They'd want to know absolutely everything that's going on. They'd want to know every facet, every detail, every cent, penny, whatever you want, of what would be going into this deal and why. So there's just the problem at Ibrox is they're desperate for a sugar daddy to just plow millions in. They think there's a magic fix. They think, as you said, like there's the beans for the beanstalk, whatever way you want to look at it. It's all fairy tales. It's just all fairy tales. It's fantasy. It can't happen. It just, not even with UEFA FFP at the moment, even, I'm actually not going to get myself twisted up trying to think about it because it just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. I asked what the end game is. There is no end game. The end game is that this will all fall flat in its face, just as Joe has said. Keith Jackson will be made out to be the twat that he is. We'll all just write blogs at the end of it and say, told you so. This is what was going to happen. And we'll move on, and it'll just be easily repeat. We'll be back to the same. They'll just continue their death by a thousand cuts of trying to catch us. And we'll just keep Pamming them off. And I guarantee, this is why I say Barry Ferguson's going to get the job, because they can't afford anybody else. They're all jizzing in their pants about the thoughts of Jose Mourinho taking the job there. Oh, I mean,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, if Jose Mourinho wants to, where managers go to die, like, I mean, if Jose Mourinho wants to finish his career in a fucking low, then go to Ibrox. I welcome it. I would love if Jose Mourinho went to Ibrox. I'd love it.
He has no intention of doing any such thing.
Yeah. So, but no.
Jose Mourinho on his deathbed will have more ambition than to come manager. People forget that this is what Mourinho does anyway. Every time Mourinho is at the tail end of one job, he's putting the feelers out for the next one. And he's putting his name out everywhere and saying, of course I would go and work there. Of course I would take that job. Of course I would take that one. And it all feeds into the Jose Mourinho mythology that he's got all these offers from all over the world. That's, it helps nobody but him. It sells a lot of newspapers, but really it helps nobody but him.
Yeah.
But no, the idea that he would ever come and manage in Scotland is ludicrous to me. I mean, even when he was linked with us, like, what, 3 years ago before Ange, it never seemed like it was any kind of realistic prospect. It was Mourinho fishing and putting his name out there and saying, yeah, I'll talk to anybody. Yeah. Okay. But when you look at Scottish football, you when you consider it for even a second. That brings us on to 5 games in the league and a Scottish Cup final now standing between us and the treble. First things first is Dundee United at the weekend. That should be the most straightforward fixture of the whole season. And I'm saying that on the back of 2 excellent results and excellent performances. But there will be a wee bit of nervousness and a wee bit of concern that with the away record having dropped off since the turn of the year, that's suddenly a much harder game than it needs to be. For all that, I still expect us to get through it. Then after that is Ibrox. And honestly, one of the things I did my nut in when the fixture list was produced, well, the number of sites that said, this is what has to happen before we can win at Ibrox. Yeah, we have to fucking lose against Dundee United. So who wants that to happen just so we can win at Ibrox? I mean, maybe I should have said that because I wanted to see us win it at Celtic Park, that we should lose at Tannadice and at Ibrox, just so we can do it in front of 60,000 of our own fans. But that thought never entered my head for a second. It was just like, get it, one at Tannadice. So the idea of winning at Ibrox does not interest me even a little tiny bit. Get it one the week before, go there as champions, have the party, take the champagne and spray it all of their supporters. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see happen. But 5 games left, realistic way. Will we win all 5? Can we win all 5? Should we even be trying that hard to win it with that much aplomb, or is this the time to like bring in 4 players from the academy, play them for every one of the games, get us in a good mood for the Scottish Cup final, having seen some youth blooded? Scottish Cup final should take care of itself. I thought Aberdeen would beat Hearts, because Hearts, as I've said in a piece last week, are Scottish football's perennial going nowhere club. More so even than the one at Ibrox, Hearts are a club that is very content with mediocrity and stuck there and is never getting out of it, as long as the current leadership is in charge. Aberdeen are the perfect cup final opponents. They will give us a good game, but if we turn up in anything like the form of the weekend, we will blitz them. So first, Eric, 5 wins out of 5, possible, doable. Should we even be thinking about it like that, or is this the time to put some academy guys in the team?
It's definitely doable. I mean, it just depends on whether Brendan wants to approach it in that manner. I mean, if we, like you said, the fixture against Dundee United should be the most straightforward one that we encounter of these five. Should we need to just go there. I get the feeling that Brendan will want it wrapped up by next weekend, and the players will too. They just want to put it to bed now because it's been dragging on longer than it should. It should have been put to bed quite a while ago. So I feel that they're in the right mind space now at the moment. Coming off the back of the win yesterday, coming off the back of the win against Kilmarnock, they're in this zone now where they know that if they play to their, you know, they all play to their strengths, that we'll just blitz teams. We'll take them apart. So I don't think nervousness will play a part in it next weekend at Tannadice. I think we'll just go up there, we'll do the job, we'll do it in a efficient and aggressive way. We'll approach it exactly the same as we have the last two games. We'll go out, we'll just swarm them. Anytime they get possession, we'll have 2 to 3 men on them, and we'll push them hard and win it comfortably again, I reckon. And I think once that's done, for the players, it'll be about going to Ibrox and enjoying that game. And if the pressure's off in terms of having to win the league and you want to go there to make a statement and to basically say, you know, you're not going to do this to us a third time in a row. So I could almost say that the players will go there and showboat. So I'd much prefer that the whole thing is actually wrapped up next weekend, and then we go on to Ibrox the following Sunday and do the business and do it in style. You also have to take into account they're riddled with injuries as well. Depends on how many of the, you know, their key players are back for that game, if any. So, and with regards to the other three fixtures, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't win them. But like you say, it just depends on whether Brendan wants to blood new players in as well, and he wants to give them chances. But you see, even if you approach those games as we've approached the last couple of games, and you put a very strong first half team out and we go 3-4-0 up in the first half, there's nothing to stop Brendan from blooding players and bringing them on in the second half and letting them play away once games are put to bed. You know, because there's no pressure on these youngsters coming on then if we're 3 or 4 up. So it's a perfect opportunity. I mean, it's an ideal scenario, really, that if you continue to put a strong first 11 out or starting 11 out and put the game to bed by half time, which is what we seem to be doing of late, you know, there's no reason that we can't get the best of both worlds, you know. I think definitely they're 5 potentially winnable games. However we approach them, I still think we're going to win them, because as I said, I think if we are going to blood youth, we can do that in the second half of games that we're on top of. But I would be, I'd be surprised if we didn't. I don't expect us to have a kind of a stuttering finish to the league like we did 2 seasons ago, you know, when Ange Postecoglou and the 2022-23 season, when we just basically crashed and burned in the last few games. I don't see that happening. So I think Brendan will be fairly ruthless in the last few games. So I'll let Joe have his take on it and what he wants to say.
Before you say it, and Joe, right, I remember that we had this chat at the end of the January transfer window when we were talking about young Johnny Kenny, and you said Johnny Kenny will not start a single game. This is the last you will see of Johnny Kenny. Goodbye. He'll disappear for the rest of this season, and you were, as ever, 100% right. I expected that we would see a lot more of Johnny Kenny than we have. Johnny Kenny is the lesser-spotted Johnny Kenny now. I can't remember the last time he was even named on the bench. But do you expect that we will see him in the last 5 games at some point?
You might get a token 5.
Anybody like him?
You might get a token 5 or 10 minutes from some of them, but there is absolutely no one in the academy anywhere near being ready to play. On Saturday, Celtic B beat Albion Rovers 1-0. in midweek, I think it was 5-0 against Clyde in the Glasgow Cup. These games, results, performances tell you absolutely nothing, and you're no preparation for going into the Celtic first team. So I think there might be an outside chance that Brendan might give Jude Bonner or someone a start in one match, possibly doing a favour for his CEO. But there is no one in the academy that's ready. Johnny Kenny, his career would be in a better place if he'd went and loaned to St Mirren, or if he'd went and loaned to England. I think he was playing well, getting regular games for Shamrock Rovers, back to Celtic. He's made his Celtic debut up at Ross County. I think 3 substitute appearances, maybe totaling about 40, 45 minutes. Not helping his career one bit. Dane Murray, he's currently injured, but he was brought back from Queen's Park. He played against Raith Rovers in a Scottish Cup tie. He played against Raith Rovers for Queen's Park in the First Division, in the Championship. So there's nothing there. We've got a decent 11 discovered in the last 2 matches. Bringing on Kuhn and Jota is good. I think they're good options. That keeps us strong and that keeps us going for the 90 minutes. So there's also Schlupp and I'm trying to remember who else. Schlupp and who's the fourth one? Schlupp and Trusty. So the 11 that started on Saturday, Schlupp, Trusty, Kuhn, Jota, and we've also got Paulo Bernardo. So that's us. That's 16 players. I expect them to be rotated and kept fresh. And the whole club needs to keep on going. 2 years ago, when you've got a final against Inverness, Cali Thistle, it's understandable they eased up. But you'll not be able to do that against Aberdeen. I'm looking for at least 4 strong performances. I think the midweek game away to Aberdeen might be a bit iffy. I don't see players being risked in that match. I think a few could be rested. Yeah. Maybe more than 4 or 5 changes, and that could be a game to bring in Jude Bonner or give someone a token start. But as I said, there's no one in the academy, unfortunately. I hope to God they're not going to be involved in the Lowland League again next season and wasting another generation of players. So we've got strong enough squad. And we might have Kasper Schmeichel coming back at some point as well. So keep it strong. It's not asking the earth for the players to play Saturday, Sunday, then there's one midweek game at Aberdeen, pick up the trophy on the Saturday and then be ready, be at their best for May the 24th at Hampden. So I don't see that there's nobody coming through, a bit of sensible rotation, but I reckon that the team that started the last 2 matches is probably the cup final team unless something strange happens. And I'm looking forward to them continuing the form in the last 2 matches. Keep that going and we'll all be in a happier place.
Good man. That's what I like to hear. Right, guys, I think we can call it quits for the night. That's an hour, isn't it?
Joe, we've been like Ryanair guys tonight. We've been on time.
Right, because I know some people might get off and do other things. I want to thank everybody who's tuned in the night as ever. I want to thank everybody who's liked and subscribed and shared all the stuff over the last few weeks and months. We will be back next week at some point, early next week, hopefully wearing another gold medal as champions, 55.
Hashtag 55.
It starts the next big PR campaign for the club and the next big splurge of marketing. It's weird because a mate of mine was in the Celtic shop towards the tail end of the St Johnson game at Perth and said that they had a bunch of empty shelves. and I'm sure they've been waiting to put stuff on them for a while, so hopefully this weekend they get their chance and they can fill those shelves and they can start planning the party once there is something to celebrate. It looks like we're now heading for the treble. We have it in our sights. We know we're in the final and we know we'll be going there as double winners. So, it's a good time to be a Tim, which is presumably why there are so many fake over stories in the newspapers. So thanks for joining us again tonight, guys, and thanks to my two colleagues, Joe and Eric, for coming on, and Joe especially with his dodgy Wi-Fi.
No problem, James.
We'll pleasure as ever, mate. Pleasure as ever, even if you were interrupted a few times, and not just by me for a change.
Okay. Talk to you all next week, guys. Take it easy.
Cheers. So what was it?